By way of review, we see Proverbs broken down into really, I would say six, some people would say seven major sections. The first nine chapters are really a call to pursue wisdom. It's almost a sermon at the beginning of the book of Proverbs. And it's got Proverbs in it. What we typically think of as Proverbs are scattered throughout it, but it is much more of a single unit than the rest of this book. And so you have in that the value of wisdom, the danger of folly, and so it's a call to receive the gracious invitation of wisdom that you might have ultimately life. Now, what is the beginning of wisdom? Where does wisdom start? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And we see that over and over again, not just in Proverbs, we see it in the Psalms, we see it in the book of Job even, the necessity of the fear of God to have wisdom. And then you have Proverbs chapter 10 through 29 are the Proverbs of Solomon. And the largest portion of that is a collection of these one line or one verse statements. And they cover a wide range of subjects. And as far as I can tell, there is no discernible pattern to their arrangement. They're not, certainly not laid out topically where you go, you say, I want to know about money. So you go to Proverbs 13. They're just scattered. And so those one line statements though from Proverbs 10:1 to 22:16, then you have starting in 22:12. So there's an overlap here, longer instructions. So they're usually two verses, maybe three or four verses long. Still by Solomon, still dealing with the broad topic of wisdom. And then chapters 25 through 29 are the collection of Proverbs that have been gathered under the reign of King Hezekiah. Still Proverbs by Solomon, written by Solomon, but collected quite a few generations later by Hezekiah. And so that those Proverbs there are go back to mostly the single verse statements, but there's some more lengthier ones in there. So it's kind of it's more of a hodgepodge there. Proverbs chapter 30 are the Proverbs of Agur. Does anybody that was here last week remember who he is? Yeah, we have no idea. That's who he is. We don't have a clue who he is. His name is not found anywhere else in the Bible. And so that his Proverbs are very different from the Proverbs of Solomon. So I don't think that we can say that Agur is a pseudonym for Solomon, because they do seem to be of a different quality than Solomon's Proverbs. Again, not that they're less inspired or less true, but they're just out of the same quality as Solomon's are. And then chapter 31 is the proverb, the chapter dealing with the virtuous woman, written by Lemuel. And that is the, you know, ends the book with this one final discourse, a single unit. They're talking about the virtuous woman. And again, as I said last week, I think it is there as a bookend to as somewhat tying back with wisdom, Lady Wisdom, in the opening monologue of Proverbs. And we go to the end of Proverbs and we see this description of this wise woman and how she lives her life. And so that real briefly is the shape of Proverbs. What is a proverb? Just in a broad definition, even in a secular definition, what is a proverb? It's a memorable statement. There's another quality there of proverbs and memorableness, and they're pithy. They're short statements that are very, very, you know, whether it be vivid or just the way they're framed, they're said in such a way that makes them memorable. And again, the brevity of them is important. It's because that is what makes them easy to remember and easy to apply. So as we go to the book of Proverbs, what are some of the subjects that are covered in your own study of Proverbs? What are some of the subjects it covers that stand out in your mind? Okay, speech, your tongue, work, fidelity, integrity, faithfulness, there's a few ways of saying that, and then money, wisdom versus folly, your way of life, the path that you live. Okay, that's a very specific subject. I'll broaden it out because it does say much about strife. Though it does say a few things very specifically about a contentious woman. Let me give you a few other subjects. It talks about planning, honesty, government, talks about the heart. That's what giving loans, parenting, wise counsel or foolish counsel gives them. It discusses ethics, death, friends, mankind in general, and going off some of what Jim said there, marriage, security, and conflict. It discusses emotions like anger, joy, laughter, sorrow, shame, grief, worry, desire, and fear. We go to the book of Proverbs and we find it talking about the vices of pride, sin, deceit, hatred, and wickedness, or the virtues not only of wisdom but of forgiveness, of hope, mercy, generosity, and ultimately the fear of God. So as you go to the book of Proverbs, what I think is the interesting things in the book of Proverbs is the two most discussed subjects, and they're often discussed together as a contrast with one another, are not specifically wisdom and folly. The two most discussed, most mentioned terms in Proverbs is righteousness and wickedness. Now, I think I said this last week, in the book of Proverbs, I think we have to read wisdom and folly and righteousness and wickedness to be synonyms. So the way of folly is the way of wickedness. The way of wisdom is the way of righteousness. And so when I said that specifically, I'm talking about the words used. We see righteousness and upright and synonyms like that used more frequently than wisdom. We see wickedness and evil used more frequently than folly and foolishness. Again, the whole point, you go back to Proverbs chapter 1, this book was written to teach wisdom. And so we have to connect righteousness with wisdom. Now, before I keep going down the sheet that I gave you, I do want to talk about the structure of the Proverbs. So I ask you just to turn to Proverbs anywhere. So somebody look at your page, pick a proverb and read it. Okay? As a ring of gold and a swine's snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion. Somebody read another one. Okay? A good man obtains favor from the Lord, but a man of wicked intentions he will condemn. One more. Okay? My son, hear the instruction of your father and do not forsake the law of your mother. What we have in every one of those proverbs, and in the great majority of the proverbs, you have a very clear parallelism. You have two phrases that are directly connected to one another. Often they're actually parallel in the number of words in each phrase. They're usually parallel in the placement of the word. So you might have, if you remember English grammar, you might have an article, a noun, and then a verb. And then the next phrase you'd have an article, noun, verb. It's often true in these proverbs that they are written in this way. So you have one phrase, and then it is structurally repeated in the next phrase, and it's a key mark of Hebrew poetry, which I know I've talked about before. So as we go to the proverbs, we recognize this parallel structure is vital to understanding what each individual proverb is saying. And now, even the three examples that were given, they're not using the same kind of parallelism. And I'm going to give you a few different kinds of parallelism that that we find in Proverbs. I'm not going to use the technical terms. I'm just going to kind of describe them for you. Go to Proverbs 12, verse 28. It says, "In the way of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death." Here you have a parallelism is repeating the same idea. It's saying the same thing twice, really. So you have, it's replaying this one there. Way is parallel with what word in the second phrase? Pathway. And life is parallel with what two words in the second phrase? No death. So you have the same statement, just it's being said twice. It's being restated to help you remember it. And so you have the parallelism that repeats itself. And that's quite, there's a good bit of that in Proverbs, but it's not the most common. So go to Proverbs 21 verse 8. It says, "The way of a guilty man is perverse, but as for the pure, his work is right." This is absolutely the most common type of parallelism used in Proverbs, and that is that which contrasts the two statements. So you have a statement, and then it's opposite. So here, the way of a guilty man is wrong. It turns aside. It's actually the picture. The way of the guilty man goes off the track. But as for the pure, his work is right. So you have way and work are contrasted. You have guilty and pure, and then you have perverse and right. And you have your choices. You have the guilty man, the wicked man, or the pure man. And that really, and I think one of the reasons that Proverbs employs the contrast so heavily is that's what the Proverbs is doing, is teaching you wisdom and saying you've got a choice here. You can live the life of folly or the life of wisdom. You can live the life of wickedness or the life of righteousness. So let me tell you about them. The life of righteousness looks like this, and the life of wickedness looks like this. So that hundreds of times you have this exhortation, what are you going to choose? You know, basically every one of these contrasts is, which one are you going to choose? And so that one is absolutely the most important in this book. And it is important that we recognize the differences between the parallelism which just repeats and the parallelism which contrasts. Otherwise we end up confusing ourselves and we raise unnecessary questions there. So go back to Proverbs 16, verse 23. Proverbs 16:23. It says, "The heart of the wise teaches his mouth and adds learning to his lips." So in this case, we have a parallel structure which now adds. So they're very similar, but you have the heart of the wise teaching and then adding learning. So it's a repetition, but it also is adding in. And there are other clear examples, but it just happened to be the one I picked, that which you have a statement and then you have some more information added. And they're not very common in the Proverbs, but there are a few of those. Proverbs 11:22. "As a ring of gold and a swine snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion." Here you have more of an explanation of a statement. And so that you have, you know, in this case, a ring of gold and a swine snout. Okay, it's vivid. I mean, you can picture a pig and you got this big gold ring in its nose. What's the point? And so the next phrase, you know, really fills it in. So you don't have, while the structures are parallel, you actually just have, in this case, the full explanation coming in the second phrase. You only get part of the information. You don't get enough information, really, and then you add to it. And then there's one more. So Proverbs 21:6, similar to what we just talked about with the ring of gold and the explanation. And this one, you might call it a formal parallelism. So again, you have parallel structure. But Proverbs 21:6, "Getting treasures by a lying tongue is the fleeting fantasy of those who seek death." So you have two phrases, But really, it's in one entire thought. You can't cut one phrase out at all. So you have one thought that is broken down into two phrases. And there are some of those in there. And so as we talk about this, and I don't want to bog us down with too many of the details here, but these are at the same time recognizing the different kinds of structures, of parallels in Proverbs is ultimately going to be important if we're going to rightly understand the proverb. And so that, for example, I'll go back to this, the gold and the swine snout, since it's so memorable there. If I'm setting that up as a contrast, you know, so then now we're saying, well, you have there's a ring of gold and a swine snout is nothing like a woman who lacks discretion. You know, I've completely misunderstood the proverb, because his point is, this is what it's like. You know, it is as out of place. It is as jarring as a ring of gold and a swine snout. And so understanding some of this, and there are study aids and commentaries that can definitely help you if you want to dig in and really break down the various, you know, figure out which one is which. But most of them, really at the same time, we can read them and recognize pretty quickly what kind of parallelism we're dealing with here. And again, as I said, most of these are going to be contrast more than any other one there. So, as I said last week, the collection of Proverbs, and each proverb itself has to be understood in the fear of God. You know, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. So we cannot take the Proverbs as just instructions in living. Now, yes, they absolutely apply to life, so that if somebody, you know, begins to apply the Proverbs and to follow the principles, they are, I would say, generally speaking, going to live better lives. They are going to reap benefit from just trying to follow the Proverbs as if they were, you know, good sayings, you know, equivalent to the sayings of Benjamin Franklin or Confucius. But to properly understand them, to gain what the benefit, the intended benefit is we have to understand them in light of the fear of God. So that someone who does not believe in God will not reap the real benefits from Proverbs. And this is one of the cautions I have, and one of the hesitations I have about, you know, certain ministries that seek to teach people the Proverbs, but without ever teaching them where it comes from, and just presenting the wise statement by itself. Again, yeah, there's some wisdom there. But if I stop short of saying, look, this is the wisdom of God, who is real, who created you, who designed your life to function, and if I don't point them to Him and the fear of Him, then they're going to, yeah, they'll gain some benefit, but they're not going to actually ultimately gain the benefit that is intended by this book. So we have to understand it in the fear of God and in the light of the primacy of wisdom. And that's one of the things Proverbs 8 does, is it teaches us to desire wisdom. Yeah, wisdom brings rich benefits, but what ultimately we see is that wisdom herself is far more desirable than folly. And so it teaches us to long for and to live for wisdom, so they show us how to live life in the fear of God and righteousness and true wisdom. Each proverb is true. Each proverb is true. In specific circumstances. And we used one example last week, which we're going to come back to. And so what this means is that the reader is responsible to wisely apply the Proverbs to their life. Does anybody remember the definition of wisdom that we gave? The right application of knowledge. So that we take information, and now true wisdom says, I have this information, now I know how to do it, how to live it, how to use it in this circumstance. So we talk about the book of Proverbs, they themselves require wisdom to apply. that I now have to go to the book of Proverbs and I take an individual proverb and I now have to discern and exercise wisdom in my circumstance to see, does this apply? And so we see that each proverb must be understood in connection with all the rest of the proverbs and in line with the rest of Scripture, so that in no way and at no time can I use any proverb in a way that is contradictory to other portions of the Bible. I cannot take my application of a proverb and set it up in opposition to a portion of the Bible and say, well, I don't have to do that end because of this proverb. We need to keep it in, we have to apply the proverbs in connection with all the Scripture, so that if I take my interpretation of a proverb leads me to disobey Scripture, then, you know, and especially disobey a clear command, then I have not rightly understood the proverb. So Jim talked about the contentious woman. One of the proverbs says it is better to dwell in the corner of a rooftop than in a house where an angry woman dwells. I think it's how it's worded. But, basically it's better to live on top of the house and on the roof in the corner than to live in the house with a nagging woman. So somebody takes that and says, well, my wife's a nag, therefore, because of the Proverbs, I can get a divorce. You say, well, no. You're not rightly applying the proverb, and I can say that because I know clearly God hates divorce. And he has said, when man is joined together, let not man put asunder. There's given a couple specific instances where a divorce is permissible, but none of them involve a nagging wife. It's not legitimate to interpret that proverb in a way that is contrary to other clear teachings of Scripture. And so we have to understand it in that bigger biblical context. We also have to understand it in connection with all of the other proverbs. And so some proverbs are narrowly true, but they must be joined with other proverbs to gain the full picture. So let me give you one example. Proverbs 22:6 is where we're going to start. There's actually four verses here when joined together. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And I start with this one because that's a verse that has troubled a lot of people. And you have a faithful Christian family and they strive to raise up their child. And then when he gets out of the home and he goes away from the Lord and some look at this verse and say, well, what did I do wrong? I mean, the Bible clearly says that I didn't train them up in the way they should go. I did my best, but obviously I messed up. And there is a lot of heartbreak. Because this verse is taken, but is not joined with the rest of Proverbs. And so, go back to Proverbs 13, verse 24. And we have another verse that is similar in the exhortation with Proverbs 22:6. Proverbs 13:24 says, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. So, now we have, okay, if I'm going to train up my child in the way he should go, I'm going to discipline him. So if I discipline him promptly, then when he's old, he will not depart from the right way. But since you're in Proverbs 13, look at the first verse. It says, a wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. So, wait a second. Train up the child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. But here, we have a wise son who's listening, and a scoffer who is not. Proverbs 19, verse 27, says, cease listening to instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. So here we have an exhortation to the son to continue listening. So, who's responsible when a child goes off the rails? If you start with just Proverbs 22:6, and I know there are absolutely are times where the parents say, well, it's my fault. But when we have the fuller picture of Proverbs, and this is not the full picture, by the way. That's only four verses out of many. But when we have the fuller picture of Proverbs, we recognize, yes, there is a parental obligation to properly train and discipline. There's also the child's obligation to obey and to continue obeying. And so that the parent's obligation in no way removes the child's responsibility. And the child's disobedience, the child's folly, does not necessarily mean the parents have failed in their obligation. And I could spend a lot of time just pulling, working through that more fully, but we see in a large number of cases that we take an individual proverb. And if we're going to really gain the full understanding, then we have to go to all of the other proverbs that address the same subject and bring them all together. And so that I go to Proverbs 22:6, yes, and I train up my child rightly with the expectation that when they are old, they will continue to follow that path. But I do not, and I also recognize that my children are responsible before the Lord for their choices. And that ultimately they are the ones who will continue to walk in righteousness or not because of their own heart and their own choices. And so they all work together. So some are, proverbs are true, but to have the full picture, you must bring all the related proverbs together. Proverbs 26, we touched on this last week, verses 4 and 5. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So we have here, back to back, and these are very, it's why these two get picked out all the time, because it's very clear that these two, They can't apply in every situation equally. You know, some would say, well, they contradict. But now the nature of Proverbs is that they are, some of them are true in specific situations, but there are other Proverbs that are true in other situations, and it would be improper to apply this proverb in this situation. And so here in this example, we have, how do you respond to a fool? Do you answer him according to his folly or not? Did anybody read Answers in Genesis this week and figure out what they said about this? They use it in apologetic. Basically, the distinction they draw is that which is found in the verse, lest you be like him, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So in some cases, you answer a fool according to his folly to show him the foolishness of what he has said. So there's a sense of, did you just hear what you just said? Kind of response. The first one is you don't, if you will, stoop to his level. You don't accept his terms of the engagement. So Answers in Genesis applies this in one specific sense of they will not debate someone who is saying, well, I'll enter in a public debate with you, but you can't quote scriptures. And we have to come at it as if scriptures is not true and God's not real. And they say, well, no, that's foolishness, and I'm not going to enter into the debate on those terms, because essentially I'm just giving up the whole debate before we even start. And so that they're saying you don't, you know, they're applying it, and you don't accept his terms and enter into his folly with him, and end up stooping to his level. So that's their interpretation of it. The two verses are challenging. So I'm just giving you their interpretation, which I think is certainly the most plausible interpretation that I'm familiar with. There are others out there. The big principle here that some proverbs are true in specific situations, but not necessarily so in others. Proverbs 11:1, it says, dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. You know, this is talking about business practices. If you're trading with somebody and you have a scale that you can tweak in your favor, or you have different weights, you know, they say 1 pound on them, but they actually only weigh 8 ounces. That is an abomination. If you are the bigger principle, if you are dishonest, that is abominable to the Lord. He hates deceit. That's an absolute. You know, we know that not only from the Proverbs, but we see it throughout scriptures that God hates lying. It is contrary to the character of God who cannot lie. And so some Proverbs are just absolute truths. Proverbs 13:4, it says, the soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. Some Proverbs are accurate descriptions of how life usually works. Are there rich, lazy people? Yeah, they inherited the money from their parents. Are there diligent, poor people? Yes, they are there. Our society is really is not true that hard work will get you ahead no matter what. But generally so, and I would say especially in the context of, was that the 10th century BC Israel, it very generally was an accurate description of how life usually works. If you're hardworking, you're out in your field, you're tending your crops, you're doing a good job raising your sheep and your cattle, generally speaking, you're going to prosper. If you're lazy and you don't go out and plant and weed like you're supposed to, if you don't feed the flock and milk the cows like you're supposed to or milk the sheep, and you're not tending the flock like you're supposed to, you're going to generally be poor. And so it's an accurate description of how life usually works. Still a bland Proverbs 13, verse 7, there is one who makes himself rich, yet has nothing, and one who makes himself poor, yet has great riches. Here, these are true descriptions of life. Are there rich people who are very, very poor? Go to Hollywood. I mean, really, that's what he's talking about. These people that, yeah, they have a lot, but they have nothing that's really valuable. And then there are those who have nothing in the physical sense, or very little, but they have that which is truly worthwhile. And then Proverbs 14, verse 11, it says, the house of the wicked will be overthrown, but the tent of the upright will flourish. So we go to a proverb like that, and is it true that right now every wicked person, they're defeated, they suffer, and in the end of the, before their life is over, they come to misery? No, there's a lot of wicked people that seem to flourish all the way up to the end of their life. They flourish, at least in the world's sense of the definition of flourishing. Some proverbs are absolutely true in the end. Will the house of the wicked be overthrown? Absolutely. Will the righteous flourish in the end? Absolutely. And then one other one that is not on your sheet, but some proverbs are true in the old covenant, so that you have they're directly related to the Mosaic promises, the promises of the land, the promises of physical blessing, and we can trace that. Now I want to be careful when I say that, because even here Proverbs 14:11, you know, there's definitely the Mosaic covenant undertones here. There's a promise of the Mosaic covenant is if you're righteous, you will be blessed in the land. If you're wicked, you will be cut off. And I think that's driving part of what's being said there. And even the problem that the other ones we read talking about laziness and diligence. And, there's old covenant, is kind of woven throughout it. And so we need to be careful and be aware that those proverbs which are more strongly connected to the old covenant, that we recognize that places a limit on its application to us today under the new covenant, because we don't have the same blessings, a promise and assurance of physical prosperity if we obey. We don't have the same assurance that we will have the fullness of our desires if we're just righteous. Now, again, I think we go to these principles and we see these are the better ways to live. And generally speaking, if you are wise in your business, if you are hardworking, if you are honest, if you show yourself to be a person of integrity, you know, then generally speaking, there's going to be some physical prosperity and blessings that result. If you're a liar, if you're lazy, if you're careless, then generally speaking, there's going to be physical consequences. And so I don't want to give the impression that there are some proverbs we just say, well, that one doesn't apply at all. That doesn't mean anything. These are true. They are principles of wisdom that still should shape how we live our life. And so as you go to the collection of proverbs, I would encourage you as you're thinking through various decisions to go to the Proverbs and learn wisdom. And you've maybe have heard the old phrase, a proverb a day keeps the devil away. And the principle is if you read the Proverbs every day, I know there are many that follow a proverb a day. You take whatever day of the week it is, day's what, the 17th. So today you would have read Proverbs 17. Tomorrow you'd read Proverbs 18. And you keep doing that till the end of the month. And then January 1st, you read Proverbs 1 and so on, so that you're reading the Proverbs basically 12 times a year and refilling your mind with these truths, because they are genuine wisdom. There are resources that are out there. If you're looking at a specific subject, there are books that just summarize the book of Proverbs. So if you say, I want to know what Proverbs says about money, you can turn to that section of that book and read the Proverbs on money. And that can be helpful. I would encourage you, though, when you're looking for, especially you're seeking to walk in wisdom, don't just pick isolated, you know, in topical Proverbs, but read and study the Proverbs, because it really is in the collection as a whole that we learn wisdom. It's not by the taking of a principle here and there, but of digging into the book and learning wisdom from God through the wisest man that's ever lived. And so I strongly encourage you, study through the book of Proverbs and make it a part of your regular Bible reading habits to be in the book of Proverbs and reading through it and give it careful attention, you know, so that if you schedule out, maybe you have a Bible reading plan and a Bible study plan. So you have a reading schedule you follow, but then you are doing some specific narrow studies. If you haven't done it yet, put Proverbs on that list of things to study and start digging into it.